Welcome to the Animal Voices Show here on 100.5 FM Co-op Radio CFRO in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. Today is Friday, May 3rd, 2013. I am your host, Jackie McIntosh, and I am joined here in studio today by my co-host, Allison Cole.
Hello.
Alyssa Ray.
Hi.
Tim on the controls.
Hello.
And our guest co-host today, Cynthia Ganatra.
Hello.
Welcome, Cynthia.
Welcome.
Thank you.
Animal Voices is Vancouver's and Western Canada's only animal advocacy and compassionate living radio program, bringing you all the animal and vegan-related news, events, interviews, lifestyle, and commentary you need to keep you up to date on what's happening, both locally and internationally. We at Animal Voices encourage the movement toward a world in which non-human animals are treated with compassion and mercy and are afforded the basic right to live free from exploitation. This program can be heard every Friday from noon to 1 p.m. Pacific Standard Time and is also streamed live at cooperadio.org and available as podcasts on iTunes and animalvoices.org after airing. Today we're doing an open format freestyle show, so we will talk all briefly about our past week and what we've been up to for the animals. Allison will share with us an article about what kindness means when you're vegan, and we will all discuss chickens in preparation for International Day of Respect for Chickens and the fact that May is Respect for Chickens Month. And Cynthia shares with us her story of her transition to a vegan cruelty-free lifestyle. Plus, we will be accepting calls from our listeners today. Have any questions or comments for our hosts, maybe relevant to what we're speaking about, or maybe something a little unrelated, please give us a call at 604-684-7561. So we have a great show for you, so please stay tuned. And I guess we'll start off with talking about our past weeks. I know, Alyssa, you said that you started a program at your work.
I did. So it was Earth Day on April 22nd, I think, or 23rd.
22nd.
And I'd been wanting to start Meatless Mondays at my workplace for the last couple years. And I just thought Earth Day was a good excuse to do that. So I just sent out an email and, you know, I'm not really quite sure what I'm doing yet or how I'm going to do it, but I just thought, well, all I got to do is get some people on board and I'll figure it out after. So I sent kind of just a general introduction, and now I have, we had our first Monday last week, and I have 9 people on board so far, which is, I think, more than half of my whole workplace.
Wow.
So I'm excited about that. And
so what does this involve exactly?
Well, I just got them to make a pledge that they would do their best to be meatless on Mondays or mostly plant-based. And I set an end date to it. I don't know if that's normally how it's done, but I said, you know, just until, say, I was going to say until June, so that's like 2 months, basically. And I just wanted to kind of make an intro first, and then maybe after this and after figuring it out, then I'll try to implement it, like, officially.
Do people ask you questions for support, like how to go meatless?
Yeah, well, I think I'm just going to send, like, one email on Monday morning that just has, like, here's a couple recipes, here's a couple restaurant tips, and here's a couple statistics on how what you're doing is helping the environment and helping your health. Great. Those are the two main focus, are environment and health. And of course, you know, I'm most passionate about animals, but in order to bring everyone in, and because I started it on Earth Day, I thought let's focus mostly on the environmental impact, and because my workplace is kind of related to lessening our greenhouse impact in a way, so it kind of fits in. And and people are totally reaching out to me and saying, oh, guess what I ate yesterday, or I tried a new recipe, or look what I have for lunch, or I tried this new restaurant. And it's like, now I can have that conversation with all those people in this new, fresh
You've
way.
You've opened the door for them to just open their minds and ask you about it instead of you telling them.
Totally. Mm-hmm. And it's so much more than just those Mondays. Like, that's what it, you know, it's like, it's not like they're only going to be thinking about those issues on that Monday.
So. Well, I hope that sticks. That's amazing. And congratulations for doing that and having so many people join you.
Yay.
Cynthia, did you want to quickly mention your...
Yeah. So I go to the Institute of Holistic Nutrition, and we have a lot of people who eat organic meats and dairy, or happy meat and happy humane meat myth going on. So I had 5 minutes in our class to do a little speech. And so I did a little talk about the humane meat myth, which I thought was really went over really well, because a lot of people don't really know what it means when something is organic and what that actually means for the animals. Because oftentimes in my school, we talk a lot about health because it's holistic nutrition. And there's this misconception that the animals that are in organic factories basically are treated better, when oftentimes they have the same mutilations as those in factory farms, and they're really not exposed to that much time on pasture, and
they all get killed the same too.
Exactly. And they all get transported the same, and that there's only one hatchery in BC where all eggs come, where all hens come from, and so that the male chicks are killed at birth. And a lot of these things a lot of my classmates didn't know, which I was quite shocked about, because it is quite a progressive school. So I was quite happy to share that information with my classmates and see the impact on their faces. And I ended it with the happy story of a farm sanctuary, that there are still happy animals, that these are animals, that only happy animals are those that aren't in the animal agriculture. Mm-hmm. They're either on sanctuaries with their babies.
Exactly. Anything with profit, unfortunately, is not happy. And we'll talk more about that later, but especially about chickens. So Allison, you wanted to talk about kindness.
Yeah, a guest who we had on the show last month, Paul Graham of the Eating Vegan in Las Vegas book, he recently had an article published in the Las Vegas Informer called Being Vegan, Kindness Will Always Be the Key. And it got me to thinking about my own experiences on how my kindness has changed since I've become vegan. And Paul says that he finds kindness to be a fundamental part of our community, but also one that is so sorely lacking in so many ways. And that's a statement that really resonates with me. I think that people lack respect towards one another in just so many ways, but even more so, there is a monumental lack of respect and humanity towards our fellow non-human animals. And of course, that's our theme on the show here, is to just educate people on those issues. In general, I think that many people are inherently good people, and that many people fall, you could say, into the category of being kind, even if they're not always kind in all ways. We're not all perfect beings, right? And for example, if they contribute to the gross suffering of animals by eating meat, but they're kind towards humans, that's one way where they're kind in some ways, but not in others. And I think that kindness is an important quality to have in our characters and in part of our lives, right? It's something that you want to raise your children up to be, is kind. And, you know, this world where we live amongst all kinds of other living beings who we interact with on a frequent basis, I think it's important to facilitate kindness and good relations in life, which will get you ahead in life, do unto others as you would want them to do unto you, right? And do you believe in karma? Because I do. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, you might think it's a fallacy, but I do think it goes without saying that people should be kind to others in order to live a fulfilled life in which they are giving and not just taking. Being of service and doing so in kindness is a part of humanity's moral fabric, you could say, and it's a way that we're meant to live in order to thrive in harmony together in this world. So what happens when you become vegan and you make a conscious choice to abstain from the cruelty that humans inflict upon animals? Your kindness and therefore your compassion just incredibly increases, and making the shift in your behavior, I feel, greatly enlightens your way of thinking in all aspects as to your impacts and your actions towards others in this world, including human animals. In his article, Paul writes, "Once I was free from participation in a system that uses and brutalizes animals, my kindness quotient rose in every area of my life." And I'd like to discuss what your experiences have been for you in doing the same in your lives. Have you found your kindness quotient to have risen in every area of your life? And how? Jackie, maybe you can start.
Well, I used to be a bit of an angry person, so I've noticed that definitely changed with my transition to being vegan. And also, I think you just have more empathy towards all living things, living beings, whether they be animals or humans. So I've noticed that definitely has impacted me, for sure.
And you spoke before how you, when you became vegan, you made a comparison as to how, what did you say? Like how awful you had been before when you weren't kind?
I don't think I was, I wasn't necessarily awful. Like, I still have days, obviously, like everybody, where you're
angry
you're angry and you're upset. But I find that I have a better way of dealing with it and just kind of, you know, looking within myself, like, why am I feeling angry? It's not that other person that's making me angry. It's how I'm responding to this.
Cynthia, just, yeah. What have your experiences been, Cynthia?
Yeah, well, I was vegetarian for a long time, and after being vegetarian for a long time and going vegan, I really felt a physical shift after going vegan and just feeling more compassion. I practice yoga and I teach yoga, and I feel like I've become more interconnected and really understood ahimsa and nonviolence and really educating myself and the violence in everything that I purchase in every aspect of my life. And I think it's just made me a nicer, happier, calmer person.
Yeah, and you know, I see kindness as being a muscle that you flex, and when you flex that muscle, it expands into something that increases in its strength and power. And I think that having that kindness, I'm just curious, like, has it helped build bridges among others between you two when it comes to showing the way you live, so that people may see this as an example of a different way of thinking and acting towards animals? How has that been in your experiences? Alyssa, maybe you can speak.
What I do hear from a lot of people, I think, who haven't really met very many vegans before, for example, Tim, when I first met him, he carried that opinion that vegans are angry and that just really turned him off. And I've heard that story a lot. So people, when they meet a vegan who isn't just angry and like in your face and, you know, telling you to put your meat down, and when they meet someone and actually make that connection and say, oh, this is just a kind-hearted person who's trying to do the best they can from their heart. Like, how can you argue with that? And I think it just speaks volumes. And I've definitely changed. I've been more aggressive in my early days of veganism because there is so much wrong going on. But as I mature, it's I never want to turn people away with that harshness.
Yeah, I think that's a good point to make, because I've heard that before. You know, when people go vegan, they just want to scream out to the world, look what you're doing to animals, stop doing it, I'm angry. But I guess I'm more speaking of a sort of like a long-term transition, whereas you have realized that you need to be kind to all creatures, and that's including your fellow humans, right? It's not just about the animals. It's about expanding that into everything. Paul says, I had been clogged up in my ability to fully channel love and kindness and had walls built up in my own spirit as a result of my lifestyle, which was of eating meat. And he says, this is no longer the case. This change has allowed my love for other people to grow even more, and my ability to extend even more kindness around me. And I think that's a thought to just really to end on a note, on a happy note with here, and just to think about that. You know, everyone can go vegan and experience what we felt if you want to learn how to sort of expand your kindness quotient, as he says.
Great. And this is deer hunting song.
Snowyev, Tuesdays 1 to 2 p.m., a program celebrating First Nations languages and cultural topics, including history, poetry, music, and spirituality. Snowyev broadcasting on Vancouver Co-op Radio from the unceded Coast Salish Territory every Tuesday from 1 to 2 p.m. and syndicated on UBC CITR 101.9 FM Wednesdays 4 to 5 p.m.
And even be kind to deer hunters.
And we do not advocate deer hunting. This is the Animal Voices radio show here on 100.5 FM CFRO, Vancouver Cooperative Radio in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. And I have the upcoming events for everyone. So Saturday, May 4th from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., that's tomorrow, Liberation BC presents Leafletting for International Respect for Chickens Day, which happens tomorrow. It's the kickoff to the whole month for International Respect for Chickens Month. This will be happening at Grandview Park, which is located at 1657 Charles Street at Commercial Drive in Vancouver. And in honor of International Respect for Chickens Day, volunteers will be at Grandview Park between 11 and 1 to hand out educational leaflets about how wonderful chickens are and how cruelly they are treated in the name of food. You are welcome to join them in this outreach endeavor. If you have any questions, you can contact Mary Chris at mary-chris@liberationbc.org, or you can call her at 604-732-8432. Do we have time for any more events? Should I keep going?
I think you could probably list one more.
Okay, so yeah. One quick event is Saturday, May 11th at 3 p.m., Barbara Jo's Books to Cook store is presenting a book signing with author Mark Bittman at 1740 West 2nd Avenue in Vancouver. That's their storefront. You may be familiar with Mark Bittman. He's a prolific cookbook author and popular columnist for the New York Times. He promotes the idea of being vegan before 6 p.m., and he actually has a new book called Vegan Before 6, VB6. It's actually called. So he'll be in the Books to Cook store for a vegan reception, chat, and book signing. And he'll be signing his new book called VB6. The cost of this event is $30, and it includes a copy of the book. You can call 604-688-6755 for more information and to purchase tickets for this event. If you have an animal-related event that you would like to have promoted on the show, please email it to us at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com, or you can post it on our Facebook page, Animal Voices Vancouver.
Great. And Cynthia, you have a story you'd like to share with us.
Yeah, I'd like to share my vegan story. So I just want to say thank you for having me. I'm really excited to be on the show. And my story starts when I was 13. So I'm 32 now, so that gives you a little bit of a timeline. And I was 13 and I was in Fiji. My mother's from Fiji and my father's from India. And where we were was my uncle's house, and he has chickens. And so when we were there, there were some baby chicks, and then there were some, you know, regular chickens. And one day, my uncle grabbed one of the chickens, the bigger chickens, for dinner, and grabbed the chicken and basically killed the
cut
chicken.
Cut his head off.
Cut his head off. Yeah, it's still hard.
My mom tells me stories of the cutting chickens' heads off.
Yeah, and so I literally saw a chicken with its head cut off running, and it was
they run around.
Yeah, it was the most horrific thing I had seen in my life. And we had been playing with the baby chicks prior that day, and I'd made a connection, obviously, knowing that this is part of my dinner. And I was just, to my mom, I'm like, I'm not eating that dinner, and I'm never eating any animals ever again. And I didn't, and I haven't since. Wow. And so that was the start of my, you know, vegetarian life. And my dad's actually from India, and their family is vegetarian, lacto-vegetarian, so they have dairy. And so for a long time, I had dairy, and I was a lacto-vegetarian because I was informed that, you know, cows were still treated very well and the babies drank the milk and that cows needed to be milked. And I was fed kind of all these misconceptions. And it was only a couple years ago that I actually did my own research and found out what happens with dairy cows. And I was just horrified to know that I was participating in this for so long. And I realized, well, I didn't know. And that's kind of when my activism started, only a couple years ago, when I realized that if somebody had told me this when I was 13, what happened, I probably would have gone vegan right then and there, but was never exposed to it. I didn't really even know any other vegans. And so that was kind of my start to veganism. And I'm also a yoga teacher, and I practice yoga. The whole yoga, not just the physical postures, and ahimsa, which is nonviolence, is a really important part of my life. And so since going vegan, I've just felt, like we're talking earlier, this kindness, this expansion in my heart, and I feel more connected to all beings, and I feel more connected to just nature and life in general. And I feel like that's why I've become more of an activist, because I want to share this. I want people to really embrace veganism to bring more happiness into their lives. It's, you know, it's about helping the animals, but it also helps you by going vegan. It's just this sharing of love. And so, yeah, now my partner went vegan a year ago, and that's really exciting. And I've just seen some amazing...
Was he an omnivore when you...
He was an omnivore, okay. But he always recognized that me being vegetarian and then vegan was a good thing, and that it was something he wanted to aspire to. And mm-hmm. He was always kind... I knew he was on the way because he'd always carry like bugs outside. He never wanted to kill anything. So I knew he had it in him. And when he turned, yeah, and he just loved it. He was with us this morning at the chicken vigil, which we'll talk about later. And yeah, it's just... being vegan is just one of the most amazing things in my life, and I just want to share it with people. And
yeah, what I see here is you and your partner, two people that had, they were vegan, and they were, you were vegans, you just weren't, you hadn't hatched yet.
Yes.
If you want to make the analogy with a chicken here, since it's chicken, respect for chickens month.
Totally.
That's how I see it. And that's how I see it with a lot of people who have said, like, wow, I just didn't know. Mm. I just didn't know. And you learned from a very young age. Yeah. Like, if you had seen a chicken being slaughtered when you were, I've heard of people sort of going through the same thing when they were 5 years old, and that's when they made the realization, and it's such an inherent feeling to say, like, I don't want to participate in that, even when you're a child.
Mm-hmm. And I think
I applaud you for that.
I think a lot of people too are like that as well, where they are, like you said, they are vegans. They just haven't maybe been exposed to it, or they're just so unaware.
Vegans.
Exactly. Yeah. So thank you so much for sharing your story. I really appreciate that. So now we will discuss chickens. As tomorrow is International Day of Respect for Chickens, I feel that today is the perfect time to share some information about these beautiful beings, their behavior, personality traits, and the horrible lives that many of them are forced to live. But before I go into that, I would like to just chat with Alyssa and Cynthia a bit about the chicken vigil that we attended today. I'll just start by saying, like, when I first arrived there, you're just kind of, like, waving at every car that's going by, being excited that people are honking at you. And
what's a chicken vigil?
Well, we were holding signs outside of the slaughterhouse.
Okay. We mentioned that event last week.
Yeah, exactly, on Commercial and Hastings, 7 to 9 a.m. And we were just trying to, you know, bring awareness to people that this is happening in such a highly populated area where people... I didn't even know it was there, honestly. I knew there was some other, you know, processing facilities in that area, but I didn't know that there was one right there. It's so hidden. So we were just trying to draw awareness to that. And in the beginning, like I said, it was just kind of fun. Oh, people are honking. And then I remember when I started to think about what's actually going on behind me, like my stomach just sank, and I just felt almost physically ill at a certain point. And it became no longer fun for me, but it was still equally as important. Alyssa, do you want to share how your experience was today?
First I wanted to say that the event was organized by Liberation BC, and Andrea and Mary Chris were out there all week, even on the windstorm on Monday. So I've just attended Thursday and today. And I'm just really, really glad I attended. I knew that it was happening in the neighborhood, but I actually didn't know that it was that building. So just to make that connection and make it really real, that was important, because I know a big part of my path personally is bearing witness. And I think that I have, like, the strength and the ability to do that. And it makes me a stronger person and helps me reach out to people and be a more effective advocate. So to just be there and witness, kind of, even though you didn't really see that much, was really important. And there was so much support from the public, just like people honking for compassion, I guess, and that it really kind of lifted my spirits, that you could see people making the connection and looking mm-hmm. right in our eyes and saying, thank you for doing mm-hmm. what you do. And just feeling that all morning, that direct connection, even though you only got to see people for a split second in the car or in the buses.
Yeah.
I'm curious as to what your sign said to make that connection with people.
Well, I know I saw a lot of people in their cars kind of like mouthing, like, 7 weeks, because my sign said female babies are killed behind these walls at 7 weeks old just so you can eat them. Okay. And I saw a lot of people in their cars kind of like mouthing to their partner or whatever, 7 weeks. And so I'm like, wow, it's actually making them kind of think. And I loved Alyssa's sign too. It said, do you want to say what?
I made a sign that said, I bear witness because her life is precious. And
that's really touching.
And then I had on top mm-hmm. another sign that said just compassion for chickens, yeah. just so that people would kind of know. Mm-hmm. But I really think there's a power in people realizing that these are individual
yeah,
birds
absolutely.
And they happen to be female.
And even just putting the words compassion with an animal, chickens, compassion mm-hmm. and chickens.
Yes.
Those are two thoughts that I think just don't come into people's brains, but they're capable of thinking that if it's brought up to them.
And that leads us perfectly into my next discussion. So I'll start just by telling you a bit about chickens. So chickens are sociable, intelligent animals. They are able to problem solve and have some cognizant abilities that actually rival or go beyond human children's. In a natural environment, chickens live in a stable group of around 30 that employ a social hierarchy, which is the origin of the term pecking order that I'm sure everyone's heard. The chickens in a given flock all know and recognize each other. Their communal activities include scratching and pecking for food, exploring their environment, taking dust baths, caring for their young, and resting. They crow and chirp in a range of 30 meaningful vocalizations. Chickens also have a strong urge to nest, and like most animal mothers, they nurture their young attentively and affectionately. A hen carefully tends her eggs in the nest, turning them up to 5 times an hour and clucking to them. And remarkably, the unborn chickens, chicks chirp back to her and to one another. Did you also know that chickens purr? Did you guys know that?
Yes, I was imitating the chicken purring sound earlier. Yeah. I don't know if I can do it again. Should I try?
If you want. Yeah.
See how they go.
It's really cute. Yeah. And it's much like our feline friends that we all have come to know very well. So if you want to see a video of a chicken purring, you should check out our Facebook page, Animal Voices Vancouver.
And if you want to see a video of a rooster snoring, I actually took one last year. Denise, who's on the show sometimes, and I went to a wonderful animal sanctuary in the States last year, and this rooster literally just fell asleep in her arms after 2 seconds, and he's snoring, and I've got a video of it. It's the sweetest thing. I'm going to post that on our Facebook page.
It's pretty amazing, the connections, sadly, modern large-scale farming practices, factory farms give chickens no opportunity to behave according to their nature. First, let me tell you a little bit about chickens raised for their flesh, or as the industry calls them, broilers. These birds are the unfortunate product of genetic manipulation, and that has drastically increased their breast size and thigh size, and produced a very rapid growth rate that outstrips the development of their legs and organs. Chickens raised in this way are supposed to reach what the industry deems slaughter weight at just 6 or 7 weeks of age, which is what I was talking about earlier. They're still babies, and they would naturally live 8 to 10 years. Many of these beings don't even make it to 7 weeks, as the growth of abnormally heavy bodies causes crippling and painful skeletal deformities, and many of them succumb to congestive heart failure before 6 weeks, not to mention the many others who die of dehydration, cancer, and infectious diseases. Broiler chicken facilities tend to be extremely overcrowded, with tens of thousands of birds crammed into a single closed chicken house. Each bird is given less than a square foot of space, so hardly any floor is visible. The birds are unable to roam, to scratch, or just avoid each other at all, and so, like I said earlier, they have a hierarchy, and that is completely thwarted, and social tensions obviously result from that. So, of course, they will tend to peck and fight each other, so
that's why they're debeaked.
Yeah, the producers debeak them, and this debeaking process, like everything in factory farming, is run assembly line fashion. Without anesthesia, the chicks are placed beak first into an apparatus that quickly cuts the tips off the beak off of their beaks with a hot blade. And this process has been compared to the sensation of having the ends of your fingers removed.
Well, there's nerve endings in the beaks. Yeah. I can just imagine how painful
that is. So extremely painful. And it's also impossible to maintain health and cleanliness in this kind of environment. So all the ammonia and the smell from the excretions, the fumes become so strong that the birds become blind quite often.
Not to mention they develop lung problems.
Yeah, like, and the infectious diseases, like I mentioned.
We just got a caller in here from Vancouver, Krista. She has a question about these practices.
Okay. Do you want to put her on?
Yes.
Sure.
So, Krista, if you want to ask your question.
Yes, you were just talking about you were at this processing plant, and you were saying about 7 weeks and people mowing 7 weeks. Are you saying we are starting to eat them at 7 weeks?
At 7 weeks of age, because as I was saying, they're giving so many hormones and they're genetically modified to develop so much quicker than they are in the wild. So yes, they are slaughtered at 7 weeks because they're growing so fast that that is when they reach what they...
I think
they,
it's even, you're just saying 6 and 5 weeks even.
But 6, they often die from other conditions, but 7 weeks is when they reach their full slaughter weight. And of course, that rapid growth, as I was saying, causes a lot of other deformities and issues, yeah.
And so would that be where like the like chicken wings come from?
Where all chicken parts come
that's
from.
That's where all chicken, and their breasts, like I said, are made to be extremely huge. So that's where chicken breast comes from. It's just where chicken in general comes from. Yeah.
I saw a good image on Facebook this week, actually, that showed the development of just like a regular non-hormone laden chicken at 5 weeks. And then the chicken, it's chicken counterpart that is used as a broiler chicken, the chickens that people eat at the same age. And that chicken's a lot larger.
They're babies and adult bodies, unfortunately. And thank you so much, Krista, for calling in.
Yeah, I think I'm having a mild panic attack and want to be sick.
There's a video you can probably watch online for free called 45 Days that an animal rights group has put out that I'm pretty sure it's available free, like maybe on YouTube. Yes. And that takes you through the whole process of seeing how a chicken is bred until it's killed at 5 weeks.
Thanks so much.
Well, thank you very much because is getting me started to going down from eating.
That's wonderful to hear.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, hopefully by the end of the year, I think I'll be totally vegan because now I feel sick.
Wonderful.
7 weeks. Chickens.
Keep in touch, Krista.
Yeah, I will. Thank you so much, you guys.
Thank you.
Great. Thanks.
I was just thinking that 7 weeks it's actually kind of a blessing in a way because they're coming from such horror that it's that they don't have to spend years and years under those conditions.
And the reason why they're slaughtered at such a young age is it's because of the money issue, right? Yeah. The less time that the facilities have to spend raising them and feeding them, it's less money cost.
You go. Yeah, absolutely.
All about money, it's the bottom line.
Absolutely. And, you know, the other thing, too, is these chickens can legally be transported for up to 36 hours without food, water, or rest, and there are no limits as to the length of the journey. And actually, Canada is it's among the worst in the industrialized world for that. So a lot of these chickens arrive to the slaughter plant already dead, and I have to say that, you know, they are probably more lucky than the ones that end up in the slaughter plant.
You saw them, right? Yeah. Being transported. Alyssa, you were saying you saw a chicken truck.
I did, yeah. When they come in, they're often stopped in the alley before they enter the plant because there's things in the way. So I didn't even really go that far into the alley, but I was looking at the truck and I was trying to get a picture of some kind of chickens that were maybe, whatever, sleeping or maybe dead. Mm-hmm. And then I just kind of moved my head over slightly. I had a big camera in front of my face. And then I saw her, just this beautiful hen, just kind of just slowly blinking and just lovely, and I just wanted to take her in my arms and I wanted to do her justice by taking a photograph and sharing it, but unfortunately I couldn't. But I want to go back and just to witness, just to show these beautiful creatures, and just to know like this is their last day here, and that, you know, we can do so much more for them.
Absolutely. I'm wondering if you guys would be okay if I share a poem. I don't often publicly share poetry, so please no harsh judgment. So this is just in reference to the slaughterhouses that we were talking about. Echoing cries and screams can be heard all around, but to those who don't listen, there is no such sound. Sadness and fear encompass those within these walls. Weak and helpless from our defects, we slip and fall. Attempts to escape the bloodshed are futile. Our lives had no meaning, and the end is so brutal. Packed on conveyors like mindless commodities, their logo an open pasture, what an oddity. Never tasting freedom, feeling grass or affection, no focus on intention until at last dissection. Yet as they approach with a bolt gun or blade, we all plead with our eyes for compassion and aid. We are packed to sit on a grocery shelf. The choice to support this lies within yourself. Killing and torturing animals, earth and all. And this oppression, only you can make the call.
It's very beautiful.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, Alyssa, did you have something to share with us?
Sure. I don't really have terribly much, but I feel like I would also like to share my poem.
Beautiful.
It's just a short one. I just wrote it yesterday after coming home from the slaughterhouse and feeling like I had just been to a very large, big funeral and just feeling very haunted, and my body felt very heavy. And, you know, you really need to find a way to get these feelings out. So whether it's, you know, just writing, freeform singing or writing, mm-hmm. or screaming in a pillow or whatever it is, like physical exercise, like you can't let them hang on you. So this was my attempt. Her wings broken, her feathers fallen, her cries are unheard. Her ears are ringing with the sound of the machine. This place is haunted by the souls of her sisters. This ground is stained in blood. Cowering in the shadow of the knife, she holds fast to her will to live.
Beautiful, Alyssa. Thanks for sharing.
You're welcome.
That was really beautiful.
So speaking of, you know, bearing witness and getting images out there and helping people make these connections and see things that we don't normally see, the Ghosts in Our Machine movie is coming to Vancouver this next week as part of DOXA, Documentary Film Festival in Vancouver. And you are, speaking of Vancouver, you're listening to Vancouver Co-op Radio 100.5 FM CFRO, broadcasting live from the downtown east side on unceded Coast Salish territories. So, as I said, DOXA is coming up right around the corner. It starts, actually, today is the first day. So there'll be two screenings of The Ghosts in Our Machine, which is Liz Marshall's film about the work of Toronto-based photographer, photojournalist Joanne MacArthur and her project We Animals. Joanne travels all over the world for 6 months a year, dedicating her life to exposing animal captivity and all kinds of horrors and ways that humans exploit animals. And this film is incredible. I've had a chance to see it, and I can't recommend it highly enough. So the showings that must sell out in Vancouver are Thursday, May 9th at 6 p.m. and Friday, May 10th at 12:30 p.m. And Liberation BC is going to be hosting an after party after the Thursday, May 9th show at a nearby restaurant where everyone can celebrate another step in raising awareness of the plight of animals. So this is an animal rights film for a mainstream audience who hasn't really thought of these issues before, and it's not really graphic at all. There's just a couple scenes, and it's actually rated Y for youth, and so it's PG, and that means that people who go see it don't even need to have a membership to the Documentary Film Festival. And they're doing a special panel screening actually on Friday, May 10th at 6 p.m. again. So the filmmaker Liz Marshall is going to be there, and she's the director, writer, producer of the film. And Kelly Davidson is going to be there as well. She's the Vancouver manager of a Lush store, Lush Cosmetics, which is mostly vegan and makes a firm stance against animal testing. So she's going to be talking about her experiences with the Ghost-Free Journey, which is one of the parts of the cross-platform aspect of The Ghosts in Our Machine. So that would be probably the night to go. That's Friday, May 10th. Oh, or that's Thursday. The afternoon. Yeah. So the panel is Friday afternoon, and the other show is just Thursday, May 9th, the night before. So online tickets are, you can get at doxafestival.ca, and the prices are just $12 or $10 for youth for the evening, and then the Friday show is $8 or $6 for youth. And you can also get them just at the box office on the night of if you're going to take your chances. It opens 30 minutes, and that's at the Van City Theater right downtown on Seymour.
1181 Seymour Street.
Right at Davie. And yeah, I just want to make sure everyone gets out to that. It is just one not to be missed.
If you have to work both those days like I do, check out the interviews that we did with Liz Marshall and Joanne MacArthur on our website, animalvoices.org. Yes.
And go to the Ghosts in Our Machine interactive feature on the website. It's a free way to experience some of the film. And yeah. That's all I have.
I have some news for us. So, Chuck Wagon Races. Did you know that Tommy Lee, the Motley Crue drummer, is an animal rights activist?
I did not know that.
Well, you know his ex-wife is, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so apparently he's urging Premier Alison Redford to cancel the Chuck Wagon Races at this summer's Calgary Stampede, calling them a bloody spectacle. So this is, he's a PETA activist. He's doing this on behalf of People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, and you know how they like to use celebrities, right, to get their message across. And so this went out in a press release last week, actually, and CBC News actually covered it. And I think that it's very relevant because, as you probably know, there were horses that were killed in the chuck wagon races last year. It's the most cruel form of activity that they have at the rodeo, the chuck wagon races. So last year there were three horses. They had to be euthanized after following the wagon crashes. And in chuck wagon races, teams of horses compete to pull wagons around a track the fastest. And more than 50 have died over the last 20 years. So it's definitely something that needs to end. Tommy Lee wrote in a letter that he wrote to the premier, "It'd be easy to get off on Western tradition without this bloody spectacle. It's the, you know," he wrote, "dude, it's the old West, not ancient Rome." So I want to encourage people to go to this article that CBC actually posted last week, because they have a poll on there that people can vote, just the general public can vote on whether they want the chuck wagon races to stop or to end. You can say yes, there's plenty of other fun events that are safer for the horses, or no, the Stampede is a cultural event and chuck wagon races are an important part of that. And guess what? The majority of people have chosen that option, 58%. So I want to encourage our listeners, get on our Facebook page, Animal Voices Vancouver. I posted this article there this morning about chuck wagon races, and take the vote there. I want people to know that Canadian citizens and anyone, you don't have to be in Canada, that people care about this issue and that we don't want to see the animal suffering.
Okay, great. And you, just a reminder, you are listening to the Animal Voices Radio Show here on 100.5 FM CFRO, Vancouver Co-op Radio in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. And we have our friend in New York, Jenny, on the phone. She's a another co-host on
Hi,
the show.
Hi, Jenny.
Hey, how's it going?
Good.
It's nice to hear from you.
Yeah, I couldn't stay away. I just wanted to chime in because you guys were just mentioning the Ghosts in Our Machine premiere that's coming up, and it was actually so funny because I was at an event on the weekend, and I actually met the guy who's going to publish Joanne MacArthur's book and was chatting with him. So we might for a future episode or something. But it's really interesting the way the film is getting out there, and even here on the East Coast, it's a pretty popular hot topic. So it's great that it's coming to Vancouver. But I mainly wanted to call because I had a question that I wanted everyone to help me with. I've been having a bit of a moral dilemma lately, kind of relating to Paul Graham's article that Allison was discussing earlier about like being kind to people and balancing that with being kind to the animals. And the struggle I'm having is with the topic of vegan bullying. I've noticed there have been some times in my own life and with some close friends of mine where people tend to like pick on vegans or say comments that might come off as aggressive or not very kind in response to someone's choice to not eat animals. And I'm trying to think of ways to deal with that that are still compassionate towards people, but help to like communicate the messages of veganism while still dealing with people being rude to you in different forms. So I was wondering if anyone had any thoughts about that, or what the different animal voices would do.
Can you give us an example, say, of some maybe vegan bullying that that you might have experienced, and then maybe I can give a response as to what I would do to that.
I feel like we're on Dear Abby right now.
Yeah. Are people telling you that you're ruining their Christmas dinner because they can't have meat, which is what has happened to me?
Yeah, actually, that happened to me quite recently when someone had said to me, like, why do you have to be vegan? Oh, you're, like, ruining our evening right now.
And I just,
I didn't quite know how to respond.
Why do you have to be vegan? Yeah. You're ruining my life because my interests are more important than the animals.
Yeah.
I find with these kinds of things, it's very difficult to address because usually I think people make these harsh comments out of insecurity, which they probably can't admit themselves. Like usually this insecurity is turned into outward hostility. So if you try to address them on a rational level, they won't be accessible for that, which is sad, but I find just from experience that's how it usually goes. So the only way I found to deal with that is to really just stay calm, stay compassionate, kind of let it blow over, and then in a different moment maybe address it. But sadly, to these like direct comments, also like often you have meat eaters coming like, oh, this is so tasty, or oh, only if this vegan cupcake had ham on it, it would be so much better or something. You can't really address that, I find. I think it might feel like a defeat if you ignore it, but I think if you address it at a different moment, you can still talk to these people. Also, just be upfront and say, hey, why do you always make these comments to me? But a direct response to these comments just from a psychological point of view, I think, is usually not very fruitful.
And I think, like, asking questions, too, like, just questioning, like, why is this so offensive to you that, you know, that I choose to not harm animals and to be compassionate towards animals? Like, why does that offend you so much?
It puts the question to them.
They probably won't respond, but it at least leaves them something to think about.
And then I always say, too, is always carry some Why Vegan pamphlets with you so that you can just, as Tim said, you know, if you're in a hostile situation, it might not be the best time to sort of go on a spiel about all the different reasons that culminate into why you live a vegan lifestyle. And so I think maybe a shorter answer is good then, or like Jackie said, is to really just like give them something to think about, like, well, why do you, you know, why does this bother you? But then to hand them a Why Vegan after, because that sort of just explains everything in a nutshell there, and and it's graphical and it's informative, and those pamphlets have just changed so many people's lives.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I agree with everyone, and I think we often have to remember that the bullying, like Tim mentioned, it's not about us, it's about insecurities or perhaps even guilt that they may be feeling for eating the animals and yours taking a stand. And so just trying to be calm, I think, also is the best way, because oftentimes in those situations we want to maybe debate and defend ourselves, but
show your kindness
and compassion. Exactly.
I have another response that's worked for me. It's just to ignore it. I don't know. I find that sometimes the most powerful option, especially if someone's like just really being rude, and just to not even acknowledge it whatsoever. Just like, didn't even hear anything.
Yeah, exactly.
I think it kind of depends on the rudeness scale.
Yeah. It depends on the person. It depends a lot on the person. I think all of these suggestions definitely work. It's just you have to get the right person. You have to come up with the right response with the right person.
And I think sometimes they want us to slip up. They want to see the angry vegan. So
don't show it. No.
Extend your kindness and compassion. Absolutely. Is really all. If when in doubt, be kind.
Absolutely.
There you go.
Thanks for calling, Jenny.
Yeah, anytime. Thanks for having me.
Have fun in New York.
Thank you. I just wanted to say I really appreciate that all of those responses kind of came from a more, like, compassionate perspective, because I know a lot of people, even just when we talk about dealing with bullying in general, there's a number of professionals that talk about, they kind of, like, demonize the bully and turn it into, like, they are wrong and they need to change, or, like, you know, those people don't have souls. But I don't think it's like that, and I think, Tim gave a really great response saying that people might be insecure or have something they're not even aware of. So, I'm going to try those things for sure, and maybe you'll hear from me soon.
Yeah, I think it's really important to empathize with people. We're all people, and we're all common in that way, and assume that they're more like you than not like
you.
Most
people aren't born vegan, so. Cool. Thanks, Jenny.
Have a great rest of the show, guys.
Yeah.
Should I go on with some more news?
Okay. Sure.
So we wanted to talk about this big story in this week, actually, about AgGag. So I don't know if anyone heard about this, but in an activist named Amy Meyer, she's 25 years old, she was charged with agricultural operation interference, a Class B misdemeanor in Draper Justice Court on February 19th. She was charged in connection with an incident that happened on February 8th at the Dale T. Smith and Sons Meatpacking Company in Draper, Utah, and she's actually the very first person who was charged under the new AgGag constitution in that state, and we've been talking about that on previous shows, on how these states are passing these bills that makes it a felony for anyone to take pictures of basically animal enterprise. So this comes down to what they really want is to stop animal activists or anyone who cares about animals to basically take pictures of animals being harmed and exploited. So guess what? These charges were dismissed this week. And do you know why? I think it was because of social pressure. So yeah, so this is a pretty big story for, you know, being the very first person that was charged under mm-hmm. an AgGag law. And this law, it was signed into law in 2012, actually, so it's really new. And it criminalizes undercover investigations of animal abuse in agricultural or livestock operations. This Utah bill makes it illegal to film or record livestock or poultry operations, including recording sounds or images without the owner's permission. It also prohibits accepting employment at these operations with the intent of making a record of the operating procedures. So what do you guys think about that?
Honestly, like, I'm hoping that all this news about this AgGag stuff will make people curious. What do they have to hide? And then they'll start Googling, hopefully, like Mercy for Animals, which I suggest all our listeners Google, and just videos about what's going on in these like slaughterhouses and mm-hmm. these factory farms, and just hopefully, even though it's trying to hide the awareness, I'm hoping that it will, you know, people will become more curious and it will actually broaden the awareness.
Did you know that Wayne Pacell of Humane Society of the United States was on Ellen this week?
Yeah, that was last Friday, actually. Yeah. I saw that.
Talking about AgGag, and Ellen donated $25,000 to HFUS.
Go Ellen!
Yeah. So you know what she said was, as soon as 25,000 people watch, I think it was the clip of that show, she would donate the $25,000. So that means it was done. Great.
Awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. And he's friends with her, right? So
yeah,
so
wonderful.
He says he just like texted her, emailed her and said, I want, you know, I consider you to be like the biggest vegan celebrity activist out there. And she was gracious enough to put him on the show. I watched the whole show, actually. I just love that show. And she gave him time to speak his message.
That's
so
great.
Thank you to Ellen for that.
Yeah, thanks, Ellen. Yeah.
One thing to note is that there's a lot of states have not passed these laws. They like in California
turned it down last week.
Yeah. And I think eight others, and it's so there is that momentum, and people are realizing that this is like, who is this protecting except for the corporations? Mm-hmm. Is it protecting the people? No, not really. No. Like, how is secrecy protecting people? And are these government representatives working for corporations or for the people? And that makes this really clear.
That makes it really relevant. And just to finish off, sort of just to conclude what actually happened on April 18th, Amy Meyer, she appeared in court where she pleaded not guilty to the charge, and then Will Potter, he's an independent journalist and animal rights activist, he reported on her case on his website, which is, I believe it's redisthenewgreen.com. Within hours, Meyer's story had gone viral, resulting in emails and phone calls to the prosecutor's office, which is why I say mm-hmm. I think it was pressure, public pressure. Prosecutor said his office moved to dismiss the case after he received new evidence during the hearing on April 18th. This article doesn't say what that was, and therefore the charges were dropped.
Oh, great. Okay.
Okay. Awesome. Do we have time for any more? Or are we done?
I think that's it for that.
I guess I have to close it up then, as fun as this all was. So
You're listening to 100.5 FM CFRO, Vancouver's Co-op Radio, broadcasting live from the downtown east side on unceded Coast Salish territories. And this is Animal Voices. And of course, we encourage you to keep in touch with us. You can please do visit our website, animalvoices.org, where you can see all our past blogs and more info and links and videos on our shows, and you can send us a note through there, drop us an email, and keep in touch with us on social networking, of course. And next week's show, we have a special show for Mother's Day. Allison, you have a couple words about that?
Okay, so Mother's Day and for International Respect for Chickens Month, our feature interview will be someone from the wonderful animal sanctuary called Animal Place, located in Northern California. They actually recently did a huge, large-scale chicken rescue of 750 chickens, and then they more recently did a rescue of roosters who were part of a cockfighting scheme, I guess you could call it. So they'll be talking to us about that. And as for dairy, we'll be presenting a segment on more on the bond that lies between the mother cow and the baby calf. So that's what's coming up for next week.
Beautiful. Looking forward to it. So stay tuned for Radio Eco Shock. We're going to leave you with a song called The Silence of Innocence. By Danny Darko.
Yeah, okay, it's for all the silent suffering that goes on for animal industries.
Great. Well, enjoy and remember to be kind to animals. See you next week.